Welcome to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast, the independent soccer show bringing you opinionated English Premier League analysis. Here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelain.
You are listening to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast. I am your host, Chad Smith, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Corey Chatelain.
Yeah, I got the window open today because it's, you know, it's still a little bit chilly, but snow's finally off the ground fully, you know, trying to get a little fresh air in here. So if y'all hear some noise, it's the sounds of downtown Anchorage.
Yeah, and same here in the Mile High Studios. It's the first day where it actually feels like spring. It's sunny. It's in the upper 60s, and I had the windows open as well. So a round of applause for spring and new beginnings and green things. And speaking of green things, Corey.
Yeah.
There was soccer played this weekend. Club soccer played on green fields. See, that's how we're going to tie that together in some abstract, obtuse way.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of good matches this weekend.
That's right. So let's just start with,
I guess, enjoyable.
The start of the weekend at the top of the table. And it was the late game on Saturday. And it was a pretty well played match, I thought, in terms of entertainment and style of play. Your final score, Liverpool 1 and Spurs 1 at Anfield.
Yeah, I watched it on a tape delay because I slept in. But yeah, it was a pretty good match. You know, old Sir Harry Kane got him his obligatory goal. You know, Liverpool arguably could have won it there at the end. Lloris made a couple of good saves throughout the match. Yeah, it was pretty entertaining back to front. And obviously I was hoping y'all would lose, but, you know, y'all got the draw. And I think on the, you know, the overall balance of play, I think that was about right.
Yeah, no, a draw was a fair result. And to be honest, Spurs are lucky that they won because Coutinho had a couple great chances that he missed. In addition to the goal that he scored, you're right. Lloris stepped up and made a couple just top-notch saves. And I thought both teams were kind of sloppy, and there was a lot of turnovers, especially in the attacking third, to where either team was just one pass away, just a simple pass from releasing someone, and they would just completely screw it up, giving it to the other team, and it was just back and forth. So in terms of free-flowing football, it was, you know, 80 or 90% there. It was just both teams were having that trouble in that last 10%.
Yeah, and I think that's to be I think that's to be expected because of the style of defensive pressure that both teams like to employ. I don't know if it would be considered sloppiness per se, but just a byproduct of both defensive systems.
Yeah, and as I said many, many times before, you're right, the both teams that press, and just like with any sport where there's pressing involved, teams that press don't like to be pressed. So both teams are, their systems are different. We all know that, but pretty similar to where they're just not used to other teams pressing you as hard as you're used to pressing someone else. So it took a little of an adjustment period on both sides.
Yeah. Familiarity breeds contempt and all that stuff.
Yeah. So you're right. Harry Kane banged in another goal. And I think he's up to 22 now on the year, which sets the Spurs, I think, Premier League record for most goals in a season. And he's still got, what, 6 games left? Or is there 7?
Y'all have 6 left.
Okay, it's 6. So he's already broken the record in the Premier League for most goals in a season. He's got 6 games left. Breaking the record that was jointly held by him. He did it last year. Gareth Bale and Teddy Sheringham.
And as much as I'm loath to give him credit, it was a pretty well-taken goal. I mean, it was definitely a pure striker's goal. Nice little turn, you know, only had about a foot and a half window to shoot in and put it right in it.
It was. And so just unfortunately for Spurs, the good Liverpool showed up. They've been kind of up and down. You really weren't sure what was going to happen, but the atmosphere was good, and they turned up, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, and I think Liverpool's, even though they've been struggling this year, you know, by their standards, there's been a lot more signs than, you know, when you watch Man U, they're kind of all over the place, where Liverpool, even when they struggled, you could kind of see that it was, or at least in my opinion, it wasn't so much that they were poor. It's just that they're getting used to that, you know, to the gegenpress system, and that there were signs that, you know, that they could still play well. They just, you know, obviously didn't have a good start to the season that kind of put them, to where they're basically chasing the task for the rest of the season. And they're chasing the clubs in front of them, obviously. But like I said, that they're always kind of signs that they were, that they're building something there system wise.
Yes. And it takes time. And we saw that under Pochettino, as we said, Klopp and Pochettino, pretty similar systems. And it took Tottenham a good, 6 to 8 months before they really got firing. And now you're seeing that in Pochettino's second year, them really taking a step forward. So it's possible that next fall you'll see Liverpool probably playing a lot better, but it may not be for another season after the next, to where he has two full summers training with these guys, to where you're really going to see his system. And then obviously there's a lot of transfer windows in between now and then, to where he's going to be able to get players that he feels fits that system.
Yeah, because that's what I was going to say, is that there may be a little more of a transition period next year as he, you know, gets his guys in and then fits the system around, you know, even though I hate that phrase, you know, his guys, but, I mean, to a certain extent, it is true. So, yeah, just meaning that, you know, even like you said, even though the system may be implemented well right now or getting there, that, you know, it may take a little more time next year as well.
Excuse me. 1-1 was your score, so Spurs earned what could have been an all-important point. They entered the weekend 5 points back, and so they clawed that back to 4, putting some pressure on Leicester City, who played the early game today. And everybody knows by now, Leicester City came through today against Southampton, 1-0 at home. I guess here's some of the notes for you, Corey. Did you see that Leicester City, it was like Fan Appreciation Day? Mm-hmm. Everybody in the stadium got free beer and donuts.
Oh, man. I knew about the beer. I didn't know about the donuts.
Yeah, they had Krispy Kreme donuts.
Yeah.
And they had the pictures, and I'm guessing that if you were a season ticket holder, they had your name. It said, you know, it was a Krispy Kreme box with a Leicester logo on it, and it said, thank you, your first name.
Interesting. And apparently it was it's the chairman's birthday tomorrow as well.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe that had a lot to do with it too.
Yeah. So yeah, maybe there was some, you know, I'm sure there was a lot of partying done today.
That's right. So let's see some of the talking points here.
They're already printing up the champion scarves. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, they even showed they like
the knockoff ones.
Well, no, they showed a few of the fans during the broadcast that already had the champion scarves. So yeah, they're already believing there.
That's poor form.
Well,
I would never, until it was completely over, I would never buy that or wear it. Would you?
No, but you know, I'm not most people, so yeah. I'm just pointing it out that some people had them already.
Okay. Very interesting. I didn't see that. I guess I wasn't paying as close attention as I thought I was. Some of the talking points here, Corey, their goal. Now, when you have to win a title in any sport, you need everybody to chip in at some point in time, right? And today, Wes Morgan scores his first goal of the year.
Yeah, the football manager goal, where, you know, the guy who hasn't scored all year scores and beats you. So that was, you know, that was that goal today.
It was.
Drives me nuts in football manager. So-and-so, his first goal of the year. Oh, yeah, of course. Of course.
And it was I don't know.
The guy who had 15 goals, but the schmuck who doesn't have any goals scores his first one. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Southampton shuts down Vardy and Mahrez, but then that's Wes Morgan. And that header, I mean, did you see? I mean, they had him pretty well covered. And I guess it was one of those situations you got two guys there, and, you know, the other guy just assumes, oh, he's going to get him. And they both didn't get him, and he sneaks through the middle, and bam.
Well, yeah, well, but at a certain point, some crosses are kind of like the, you know, there's the aphorism in American football. You can't defend a perfectly thrown ball, You know, yeah. certain crosses, doesn't matter if the guy's marking them, you know, it's just put it right on his head. And that's basically what Albritton did.
Okay. So you put it on the quality of the cross is what really set that apart.
Yeah. I mean, like we've talked about before, technically speaking, yeah, okay, he could have marked them better, but you know, I tend to be a positive affirmation person, and you know, the quality of the cross had a lot to do with that as well. It wasn't like the guy was being poorly marked. Yeah, he could have been marked better. It's not the same thing as, you know, being poorly marked either.
No, I got you.
At least in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, obviously from a, you know, a completely cynical analysis point, yeah, you could have been marked better.
Well, yeah. Me as a Spurs fan said, date it, Southampton.
Yeah.
Play some defense.
Yeah, and, you know, the goalkeeper could have had 8-foot-long arms and saved the ball, too. You know, come on, genetics. Yeah, come on, genetics. Get on that.
Is it Forster? He's already 6'7". How come you can't be 7'2"?
Yeah, well, so he saves everything against us. Why not against them?
Yeah, be bigger.
Yeah. Why couldn't he have been 6'8 instead of 6'6?
Yeah, I know. He's a big man. And he moves pretty well, too, for a keeper of that size.
Yeah, so anyway, I just thought it was a pretty – I mean, it had been a very difficult cross to defend despite, you know, no matter the marking, in my opinion.
Okay, and that's fine. And that's why we have you on for the analysis. So other talking points here, which have to be the handballs. They've been some lucky recipients of some non-calls. And today you have two incidents to talk about. The first one, I already forget who it could have been on, but I don't think that was a handball. I could see why that wasn't called. And I'm trying to remind me here. Do you remember the first incident?
I don't know, because I don't know which one's which. I just remember the Robert Huth one.
Okay, yeah. The first incident was the one where the guy was turning. I remember now. He turned and the ball hit his elbow.
Okay, yeah, that's not the Robert Huth one.
Yeah, I've seen that one called before. And that's the problem, as you said. Hey, we don't really care. Call it, not call it. We just need some consistency in the call, because we've seen that called before, to where you're turning, trying to get out of the way, and it hits your arm. Not called in this case.
Yeah, because there again, that's one of those, you know, a lot of the announcer, they always talk about intent. Well, it's like, okay, well, I'm not intending to handle the ball, but since I can argue, well, I'm not intending to do that, I am going to stick my hands out and make myself bigger and play almost like a quasi-goalkeeper, and my arms are extended out blocking the path of the ball. But, hey, I'm not intending to handle the ball, but you are creating – you know, a barrier with your hand. So, like I said before, to me, and I, you know, obviously some people will disagree with this, but it's something that they really should, you know, that they should take a look at and really come out and say what's a handball, and, you know, and clarify once and for all, you know, this intent crap. Because, like I said, to me, the intent crap is, it's kind of a cop out in a sense, because, well, like I said, just go running with your hands out. And, well, I'm not intending to handle anything. I'm just making myself bigger because, you know, that's the way, you know, when you try to stop, your arms come out. But I'm not intending to handle the ball. Yeah, but the natural byproduct of that is you're making yourself twice as big, you know?
Yeah, and remember, I think when we read the rules, it doesn't mention anything about intent.
Yeah, no, but that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, that there's how it's applied, because, you know, like my thing that I love to point out, that, you know, pretty much every double play ever turned in Major League Baseball, the second baseman's not actually touching the bag, but they give you the neighborhood call anyway.
True. So some of the criticisms you have of the calls, and that would be the second one, the Huth one, it has to be. I have no idea how that was not called a handball. Now, I understand, yes, it was in close proximity, but when you have your hand that far away from your body, and it's blocking really the only realistic place where that player has to shoot the ball, that has to be given in that case.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Because if not, okay, well, just coach it that way and then tell just, oh, well, we didn't intend it. It just hit ball to hand.
Exactly, yeah. So anytime you're, you know,
if that's the case, just stick five people on the goal line, put your arms out. Well, I'm not intending to stop the ball.
Yeah, I don't know how they didn't call that one. I mean, because it was pretty obvious. I mean, I know he's close, but your hand has no business being there. He had both of his arms out.
Well, yeah, because there again, because everybody wants to act like a lawyer, let's drop some lawyerese on people. Yeah. Just because you don't intend to do something, you can still be negligent.
Yeah.
And the hand is in a negligent position, intent or no intent. So yeah, if we want to be all lawyers and talk about legalese, then let's talk about negligence and players putting themselves in bad situations because – like I said, to me, I'm starting to think that coaches are kind of starting to tell defenders to put their arms out because, oh, well, intent, it's ball to hand. We can argue that because, I mean, 3 weekends in a row, I've seen replays of guys where, again, that they move the hand into the body. And then inevitably the announcer goes, oh, well, he's moving his hand into the body. It's like, well, yeah, where's the frickin' ball? Inside his body. So you can then argue, well, my hand's inside. Yeah, your hand's inside now helping you control, you know, with the stomach. And you're making it look like an inverted handball because, oh, well, my hand's inside. So like I said, it's one of those that, you know, maybe I'm daft and I'm bitching about something that I shouldn't bitch about. But like I said, to me, it's just there's too many of these to be happening to make it look inadvertent to me anymore.
Yeah, there's a lot of gray area out there, and I see there's a lot of people. If you looked on Twitter this morning and throughout any game, there's everyone is saying it now to where, hey, these rules need to be clarified. What is what? It's so inconsistent, and I understand there's really not much you can do to make it consistent because these are humans. But they just need to be instructed.
Or just come out and say, once and for all, it is an intent thing. Because, again, that intent thing isn't necessarily something that they came out and said, this is how the rules call. It's just something that's kind of been called that way. And that the announcers jump on it and they keep saying it. But, you know, the referee association's never really come out and said that. So if it is that, just come out and say it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the referee associations don't get to decide, though, right? FIFA does. It's the rules are the rules.
Well, but they do get to decide. I mean, FIFA makes the rules of the game, but each independent FA can make their own rules as well.
Well, to a point, like in terms of maybe some interpretation things like this would be. I don't mean to make it sound like that we're ripping on Leicester and they don't deserve to win and blah, blah, blah. No, fair play to Leicester. They're doing what they need to do. They're winning. As I said, it's a great story. And it's just, it's hard for me right now to, now that it's basically going to happen, right? This is pretty much a slam dunk, barring an absolute collapse because their magic number is now down to 12 points, Corey. With 6 games left, looking at the standings, they are 7 points ahead of Spurs. They're on 69 points. Spurs are on 62. Arsenal on 58. And so I think if they win with one more point, Leicester City eliminates Arsenal from title contention. And that'd be next week. And then right now it's 12. So any combination of Leicester gets 12 points in their last 6 games or a Spurs drop points that goes to that total. So basically, Arsenal and Tottenham need to win out, and they need Leicester to completely collapse. That's what you're looking at right now.
Yeah, and the system that they play where they, you know, sit back and counter, that's not going to happen.
No, it's not. All right, another thing that's pretty interesting is this got a lot of play on Twitter today as well. Today is April 3rd, and 1 year ago exactly, Leicester City was still 7 points in the relegation zone. They were 7 points from being safe. And now, exactly a year later, they're 7 points ahead in the title. They went from literally 1 year in time from worst to first in a calendar year at the same exact point in the season with a 7. So 7 up for them. So 7 ups for everybody.
Yeah, and you couldn't write the script, but apparently somebody did. So
and it's that 7-up may or may not be laced with illegal substances that allow them to run fast, right?
Yeah. Secret Asian doping agents.
Yeah, who knows? I saw someone had a great one today. It was like, here's the exclusive exclusive footage from the Leicester team canteen. This is what Ranieri's feeding them. And it was like this guy fixing up some pizza. And the pizza was covered in cocaine, and the guy was there with a razor, lining it all up on the pizza. And then there was the very odd thing. Did you see this? It was one of the mascots, you know, so English mascot is not a guy in a costume. It's a little kid. And the little kid's in the tunnel, and he's got some white powder on his sleeve.
Yes.
And he brings it up.
Leicester magic dust.
And he brings it up to his nose, and he was sniffing it in, and he sits, and you could see him for like the next 30 seconds going, it's fascinating. You need to find this on Twitter. I don't know what that little kid was sniffing. He was snorting something.
Adderall. Maybe. Or whatever they give the ADHD kids now.
You need to see this. If not, I'll send it to you if you want to see it. It's quite interesting. Well, something's up.
There you go. Maybe that was the fan appreciation thing as well as whatever their, you know, what did we say last week? Ground up tiger gallbladder.
Yeah, there we go. So, yeah, if you haven't seen that, look for it on Two Dapped Yanks on Twitter. And if you have seen it, let us know. What do you think that mystery substance was? What was that young man snorting?
Pixie sticks.
Oh, maybe. And I did that when I was a kid. That hurts.
I was going to say, I only say that because a buddy of mine did that when we were like in fifth grade. And
Yeah,
he basically had to go to the school nurse for about an
hour. Yeah, that's a bad idea. Don't do that, kids. I did that once.
Yes.
Ouch.
Yeah, well, I had sensitive sinuses back then, so, you know, I let him make that mistake.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so Leicester is a great story, but, you got to, as I said, you have to play well, which they certainly have. And you got to get lucky, which they certainly have the past few weeks as well. So maybe we'll see. I know they said maybe the team's doping. Well, I think maybe they're doping the water or the referees to get them to to have bad judgment or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it was just a little disappointing when they talk about the crowd noise and they show shots of the crowd and they got those stupid clappers.
Oh, yeah. But that was a big talking point as well. The clappers.
Yeah. But they seem to be proliferating around England now. It's another Americanized kind of thing, you know, the stupid noisemakers. You already chant and make enough noise. Don't use clappers.
Mm. Cowbells will be next.
And get off of my lawn.
Yeah, cowbells will be next. All right.
That's, great. Mississippi State's going to get a team.
Yeah, that's right.
Clang, 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 clang.
Stark Vegas FC, right?
Yeah.
All right, a few more notes or one more note from the weekend. Chelsea beat Aston Villa, and the highlight here, Corey, is the debut of Pato.
And Matt Miazga.
And Miazga, yes. Thank you for reminding me of that. I guess he started, which is you rubbish him, right? Call him out, he's terrible, and then he gets his first EPL start.
Hey, so I tweeted on Saturday. Yeah. You know, you can look it up. Hey, shows you what I know. Miazga's terrible, and then he gets a start, you know, a few days later for Chelsea. Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe Gus was listening to the pod and said, hey, I'll show that guy.
Yeah, although Hooding did say during the week that he was going to use the rest of the season to experiment with the, with the lineup. Because he played some young guys, the Jake Salter, whatever his name was. He got he played, you know, Ruben Loftus-Cheek got a start. Kennedy got a start. So, looks like he's going to experiment for the rest of the year. So there you go, MLS bots. Miazga is going to get some playing time.
There we go. Yeah, the guy who was asking me, why isn't he playing? Well, there we go. I guess they've officially given up on the season now. And they're going to try to see what some of these young players have, which I guess makes sense. But, hey, it may not matter because if they bring in the profile coach that has been linked to them, I don't know if these young kids will get a legit shot, right? Because there's going to be a tremendous amount of pressure on the new manager to win right away. And you don't have time to break in kids when you're under that protocol.
Yeah. And especially with, you know, the type of owner like Abramovich. I mean, we know a couple of longtime Chelsea fans and they've been clamoring for a while to play the kids, but you know, that's the problem with modern football and the super clubs is a lot of times you don't have the opportunity to play the kids, because if you play the kids, it's going to take 2 to 3 years to get them up to speed. And, you know, does the fan base and the owner have that kind of patience, you know, in this modern age, especially when you have two bad games and every reporter in the country is going to, you know, say how terrible you are, or, you know, how it's a crisis and all that garbage.
Yes. But getting back to Pato, of course, his name means duck. What? And so the headline was, after he scored and he broke his duck, is Pato breaks his duck.
Man, that's clever.
Ha 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 ha. Let's get a pity laugh for the journos over in England. And it was a penalty too. I haven't seen it yet. I forgot. I taped Goal Zone, but didn't watch it.
Yeah, I watched the match.
Oh, you watched the match? Did he draw the penalty?
I taped it. Yes, he did.
Okay, so he drew the penalty and then was rewarded by being able to take it. So that's good. Okay. That gives it a little more legitimacy in my mind.
Yeah, he talked forgot who it was. They had a quick little discussion, and you could tell he was like, come on, let me score, you know, blah, 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 kind of thing. And so, yeah, so, you know, he basically got rugby tackled to the ground. You know, it was a pretty stonewall penalty in my view, you know, as much as I loathe to give Chelsea credit. But, yeah, won the penalty, took the penalty.
Okay. So that's life in the mid-table and at the bottom of the table, Corey.
Highlight. Great match.
Yeah, your six-pointer was the Norwich-Newcastle match, which we thought would be good. And we said, hey, this is one to keep an eye on. And I think it delivered, no doubt.
Oh, absolutely. And that's, you know, of course, I tweeted after the match, you know, players and fans celebrate full stadium pro-rel for USA. You know, like I said, I don't see how people can look at that and be anti-pro-rel, because – you know, I mean, the players were celebrating like they had, you know, they had won a trophy, and the stadium was loud the whole time. So, you know, we need to get beyond this myth about we're not ready for it. So,
yeah, and it was a great goal by, I mean, both sides had great goals. There's a lot of really well taken goals, but the winner was a nice one slotted into the bottom right corner. Mm-hmm. And it was by Olsen, who's a defender, right? Or am I thinking of somebody else?
Yeah, Martin Olsen. One who used to be at Blackburn.
That's right. So he scored the goal, and yeah, and it was absolute pandemonium there. And remember, they took a 2-1 lead, and then they got pegged back. So
and his shot did that thing that's always nice, you know, when you strike it. It did that late little dog, you know, that late little dodge right inside the inside post. When you strike those are sweet.
Yes, I know it was. I was like, ooh, that's what you let out when you see that, because you can kind of see it and you're like, oh, that's going to go in.
It's kind of the soccer version of a C&I ground ball, but, you hit it just outside the post and it dove right inside the corner or right inside the post right before, you know, it went by.
That's true. So let's just recap what's
in
going
stoppage
on.
Stoppage time. So, madness. Yeah.
At the bottom of the table, Aston Villa has already been pretty much relegated, as we said. With their loss.
We called that in December.
Yeah, they're on 16 points, 9 points back of Newcastle. And I think, is it mathematically, I guess they're 11 points back right now. So I guess Aston Villa, unless they win next week, will be officially relegated next week. I haven't seen that reported, but looking at the math here, they will be officially relegated. That is if Sunderland gets a result too. Sunderland needs a point.
Yeah, their situation is so bad, as you know, they're to the point they couldn't even bribe their way
out.
Oh,
never mind. I'm looking
now
at this wrongly. They're already done. They're mathematically out because Norwich is the next team up on 31. My bad. See, me and math don't get along when I have to do it in my head on the fly on the air.
Yeah, so even if they were alive, they weren't getting out of that.
No, they're 15 points out. And I guess they still are mathematically alive because there's 16 points available.
Yeah, they're not.
There's 16.
Enough. They're done. 18.
There's 18 points available, so they're still alive. So hold out hope, Villa. You could win out and still maybe no. Newcastle has taken it on the chin again. 2 6-pointers in a row where they dropped points, right? Because they drew that Sunderland game and ended in a draw, correct? I already forget.
Yes.
2 weeks ago. So they've dropped points again, which hurts them. They had to get 3 points out of one of those two. and they're on 25, but they're still only 6 points out of Norwich right now. So they do have a chance, but with six games left, they're in a situation where they're going to have to win 4 to 5 games to have any chance. And I just don't see that happening. They don't look – I mean, I know Benitez was put in a bad situation, but I don't think he has any answers right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's one of those that kind of like, the, you know, what I jokingly said about Gary Neville, you know, knowing what to do and getting it done are two completely different things. So, you know, even though he has the tactical nous and, you know, lots of top flight management experience, that's not necessarily the same thing as getting that done or, you know, getting the job done. And especially in a situation where we've said on many occasions, Newcastle's main problems, despite how poor they've been on the field the last couple of years, it's the behind the scenes thing. And when those go on, that's rarely translates, you know, into on field success. So, you know, in short of a miracle, I think they're going down as well at this point, because they really needed to win today.
Yes, and then you got Sunderland on 27. I guess they kind of have a chance. They're still 4 points back.
Yeah, but they play Leicester next week.
Yeah, they have Leicester next week, which doesn't help them. So I think you're looking at Villa, United, and Sunderland. There's probably a 90% chance those are going to be your three relegated sides. And there's also a very good chance that they'll be officially relegated, you know, before the last game of the season and maybe even before the second to last game. So there might not be any drama at all at the bottom of the table come that last day, looking at the table right now.
Yeah, I just think that's going to be the situation, that Newcastle is going to be a bit of a yo-yo club as long as Mike Ashley's involved.
That's right, but at least you can go to his sporting goods store and probably buy some yo-yos.
Yeah.
Right? We get some Newcastle ones, some black and white striped yo-yos.
Yeah, I would say, there you go. Let's jump on Newcastle yo-yos. Get those sold.
It's not a bad idea.
You know, just figure out a way around the trademark laws and, you know, make them TDY Newcastle, or, you know, Relegation Castle United yo-yos.
Yeah, you don't have to put the name on there. You just make a yo-yo that's in black and white stripes. That's legal. They can't stop you from doing that.
Yeah, and just put relegation on it.
Yeah.
or pro-rel. Pro-rel text on it in black and white yo-yos. There you go.
Well, there we go. There we go. And now we just leak that over the air, and someone's going to patent that sucker tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Bob Kraft's working on the paperwork right now.
Maybe. Oh, boy. All right. So there we go. That will wrap up the talk of the on-the-field action this weekend. And so we'll now move to some off-the-field stuff. Some pretty interesting things going on out there. And this first one was announced on April Fool's Day, which made me think that it was not real, but it was real.
Yeah, sometimes you got to watch the timing of your news releases, people.
That's true. And I learned something about where April Fool's came from. We could share this with people. I don't think most people know this. I didn't. Do you have any idea about the origins, Corey?
Of April Fool's?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought it had something to do with like some spring festival in medieval England or something.
Sort of. You're kind of on the right track. Now, I didn't look this up to verify, but I'm going to trust that the where I heard this was reputable, and I believe them to be. So it came from, like medieval France, and it happened because – you know, back in the day, we used to be on the Roman calendar, and now we're on our calendar, which is what is it called, the Julian calendar?
It was Gregorian, I thought.
Yeah, Gregorian. Yeah. Anyway, so the new year.
The Julian calendar is the Roman calendar.
Is the Roman calendar, yeah. So the Julian calendar, April 1st was New Year's.
Ah.
And so when they made the switch, all these people in France, they would still go out and celebrate New Year's on April 1st. And that's where the term April Fools came from, is that they weren't smart enough to know, hey, we switched the calendar. So gotcha. April 1st used to be the start of the new year under the Roman calendar. and then they switched, which is all kinds of historical themes linked to that. If you're interested in that, it's very fascinating to how much different our world is just because of a simple calendar change.
Yeah, well, we could. That's part of the reason why I got into conspiracy theories is my love of ancient history and alternative history and all that. But you know, if we wanted to, we could start another pod with all that stuff.
We could.
But so anyway, right, moving
so back
on
to the story at hand. Yes. So AFC Wimbledon announced on April Fool's Day of all days that their club is going to be the subject of an American movie made out of Hollywood, out of Fox Studios 2000, that I've never heard of before. So Fox 2000 has this guy. He is an author that I've never heard of. His name is John Green, and he writes fictional books for teenagers and young adults, and he's won all kinds of awards. I'm looking at his wiki page here. Pretty much every book he writes wins, you know, best book of the year, best young novel, best teen novel, blah, 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 novel, novel, novel. And this guy is a Wimbledon fan. He is a sponsor of the club. They have a stand named after him at their stadium. And he's heading up this movie that is going to chronicle their rise as a Phoenix club. And so, I don't know, some people may not know their story. So, Corey, fill them in on what makes the Wimbledon story movie worthy?
Well, yeah. They're now called AFC Wimbledon, and they're actually – I don't think they're technically a Phoenix club. I thought they were technically like a breakaway club. Although they do – well, yeah, I guess they are a Phoenix club because they're technically – the Wimbledon history is technically theirs. Anyway,
yes,
the old Wimbledon FC, which had the meteoric rise from non-league football into the top league in England back when it was the old first division – there was talk for years to move them to Milton Keynes, which obviously the people of Wimbledon didn't want. And then inevitably the owners basically told all the Wimbledon fans to go to hell, ended up moving the club to Milton Keynes. And the fans of Wimbledon started a new club called AFC Wimbledon that got started in the, forget which league exactly they started in, but it was basically the sixth division. And they're, you know, they've now worked their way up through non-league football again. I think they're in League One now, or are they in League Two?
I do believe it says that they're in League Two here.
Okay. But yeah, so anyway, but they're fully professional again, but they're basically a breakaway club, kind of like FC United of Manchester, although obviously that was for different reasons. But yeah, so the old MK Dons is the old Wimbledon, but – you know, AFC Wimbledon claims right to the old Wimbledon history. So basically MK Dons kind of, you know, did the franchise thing and moved the club, and the old Wimbledon fans told them to go to hell and started their own club.
Yeah. So that was in 2002 when that happened. And just to give you some more facts here, they got 5 promotions in 9 years, reaching the Football League in 2011. Which is pretty quick rise. And right now they are in League Two, I do believe. I've read a different article that mentioned all this. So, yeah, so this guy is a Wimbledon fan. He's an American author who has connections to Hollywood, so you know everything's about connections. There's all kinds of great stories. If Leicester wins the title, that'll be certainly maybe a movie someday.
They'll certainly make it for overseas, if not here.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of great stories. Like, we all know Swansea was, what, 5 minutes away from being out of the Football League altogether?
Yep, 15 minutes away from being an amateur club.
And then, bam, they're in the first division. Club. Yeah, so all kinds of great stories like that. And so Wimbledon, a fan-based organization, rising their way through the leagues. And it wouldn't surprise me if on their current – trajectory that in the next 5 to 7 years they reached the first division.
And you know AFC Wimbledon's other claim to fame, right?
They're not very good at tennis.
Well, that too. But Sports Interactive, the makers of Football Manager, is one of their sponsors as well.
That's true. And
so for all you FM nerds out there, support AFC Wimbledon.
Yeah, and that's actually their shirt sponsor.
Yes.
Is FM, Football Manager. Yeah, and that's why when you play the demo and they have all their videos, it's always Wimbledon.
Yes.
So, all right, yeah.
But hey, we need billionaires for clubs. Herp-a-derp.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking this guy's pretty rich, but.
Just saying, some clubs, you don't need a billionaire. You just need a thousandaire.
No, you're right. You got to start somewhere. You do have to start somewhere. So there we go. So there's the story of Wimbledon and the movie that will be coming out, and who knows how long that will take. And I'm sure they'll Hollywood it up somehow.
Oh, yeah.
Who knows? There'll be like some love interest story, I'm sure.
Yeah, or the owner that moves them to Milton Keynes or the other club will be an American or something.
Yeah.
Yanks is ruining our game, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which we kind of are, but you know, that's besides the point.
Okay. Another story that off the field, and this is what we've talked about a lot in the past, Corey, is the topic of agent fees and agents and transfers. Now, as you know, they deregulated the agents this last summer, which was a pretty controversial move because now there's no way to vet these guys. But one thing that I did not know about, and we saw some numbers out last year, and I think this might be the second year of this now, is it's announced that the FA will publish the names and fees paid to all agents by Premier League clubs over the past two transfer windows. And this is something that was mandated by FIFA. So they have to, the Premier League and the Football League have to publish their tables showing the money spent on agents, and then they have to list the agent on every deal. But they don't have to give the amount per transfer. So it's just going to be the total amount of money per club spent on agents and the agents involved in those deals. But we're not going to get a blow-by-blow item line list, which I find kind of odd.
Well, but see, I forgot they had the deregulation of agents. And if you would have said that before we came on air, that's why they started this. So it's basically a non-legal binding way of trying to keep agents in line by basically, not exactly outing them, but when your name's out there, the theory is you're going to be less, you're going to be less shady if, your name's going to be bandied about in the public domain, with all these, if your name's attached to some of these deals. So that's why they did it this way, because of the deregulation. So like I said, it's a way of trying to keep the agents in line, I would think.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's going to work, because it's just going to blow up with these record TV deals in the Premier League. Wages are going to go up. These agents are just going to get more power.
Because in the past you had the bung type deals where managers were taking fees off of it. Well, now if an agent's got, charging $700,000 for the deal and he's on all of them, but yet, the transfer is only, even though you just said they don't have to name the transfer fee, but if a guy's taking a huge fee on a deal that doesn't seem like it requires that, well, then all of a sudden you can start asking questions of, well, why does this guy, take these huge fees when maybe that's a way of price gouging clubs, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I'm reading here.
Yeah, at least that's what I'm guessing. Without actually being in the room when this regulation was written.
Yeah, and again, here we have FIFA has a, not a regulation, but a recommendation that agents shouldn't make more than 3% of the player contract, but there's no way to enforce that rule, which makes me understand, why not just enforce it?
Well, yeah, but there again, that's one of those that, like I said, if you're, you know, if the transfer is in a third division and the guy's taking 100,000, you know, euro fee, well, then all of a sudden, well, wait a minute, this deal's probably only worth 30,000. Why is he getting this huge fee? So that's what I'm saying, that I think it's a way of trying to keep the agents in line. Because especially as you get in the lower divisions, sometimes, you know, I mean, obviously the big deals are the ones that are going to get the headlines. But a lot of times when it comes to, you know, the type of borderline human trafficking, you know, with players from places like Asia and Africa, where, you know, sometimes these agents bring 15 kids over with the promises of riches. And when they don't pan out, well, they just basically leave them on the streets to fend for themselves.
Yeah.
So like I said, I think this is kind of a way of trying to get rid of that, or, you know, to try and limit that to where, like I said, if your name's attached to these kind of shady deals, then, you know, maybe they can start targeting those guys later on. You know what I mean? Or, it, you know, it's kind of like a white blacklist, if you will, that, you know, you're not exactly blacklisted, but if your name's out there, well, then the clubs can maybe start going, well, you know, wait a minute, this guy's attached to all these deals. Maybe we're going to stop doing business with this guy. You know what I mean?
That's true. And for public consumption, we may not know what those fees are, but people inside the industry are going to certainly know who are the guys, you know, cutting the shady deals.
Yeah, like that guy that used to do all the deals with that, what was that sports management company that was attached to Corinthians for a while in Brazil. And he cut those weird third party deals with when Tevez came over to West Ham the first time. That deal was pretty shady, and that was basically why the Premier League instituted that third party ownership ban. So just meaning that, you know, I think it's a way of trying to limit those deals and some of the lower division deals when guys are bringing, you know, two dozen kids over with the promises of riches and then, you know, basically dumping them on the streets, you know, when they don't pan out.
You know, I hear you. And remember, for the people out there, in case you don't remember, their system is totally different to ours, to where here in the United States, agents get played by the player. So you take X percent of the player's salary. Well, in soccer in Europe, the player gets 100% and the club has to pay that extra 10% or whatever it is to the agent. So a transfer fee never really is what they say it is. Part of that may or may not include what the agent's cut is too, which I think is ridiculous. And I think that's, hey, if you want to cut down on the agents, well, then they're taking advantage of the clubs, because the clubs, you know, they're going to pay the agent fee to get the player 9 times out of 10 if they have the money. And so those rates are only going to go up. But if you say, hey, that's going to come out of the player's salary. Now, obviously, they may do some things to artificially raise the player's salary so the agent still gets the same amount of money. But I think that would help eliminate some of these shady deals as well if the player actually paid the agent and not the clubs themselves.
Yeah, well, that's, you start getting into all sorts of different things, like how the tax laws in the European Union are, and that, you know, that over here, a lot of times the taxes are embedded in your sales price, where over there you get taxed at every stage, you know, of production with the VAT, you know, with things like VAT taxes and all that. So again, without being fully privy to European law, you know, I'm not sure how you would exactly do what you're talking about that. Cause I think, or you know, with that price thing, cause I think some of that has to do with how VAT taxes are applied over there. Excuse me.
No, you're right. And so maybe that's something who we'll have on the show again. The CEO of Fieldu would probably have some insight on some of that. So that might be something to ask him next time we talk to him.
Yeah, because my little understanding of EU law, I think that's why, or I thought that was why the agent's fees are worked that way, because it has something to do with the way the VAT tax, or with a similar type of tax, because in essence, you're selling a product, even though it's a human that's a football player, you're still technically, you know, selling a product. So I think those still get taxed like a product would in the EU. Cause like I said, I think their laws are a lot different than ours when it comes to,
yeah, obviously
when it comes to contractual stuff.
Yeah, no, they are. And that's the key difference. So, yeah, probably no way to unwind all that at this point in time.
Yeah, just meaning over here, I think businesses only get – I don't think you get taxed on a contract. I think it just gets wrapped up into the payroll tax, if I remember correctly. We're over there, the deal is separate from the actual payroll or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or that it's taxed – or that the deal is taxed differently than the payroll or something.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, hey, if somebody is more knowledgeable in those inner things, let us know. Or let us know someone who might be, because we're interested in these things, and I think people would enjoy hearing about, you know, in layman's terms, the nuts and bolts of all this, because these financial issues are only going to become more and more prevalent as the, you know, that the piece of the pie grows bigger, which you're already seeing with the erratic results that we've seen this year. And the TV deal hasn't really kicked in fully yet. It's only going to get bigger from here. So yeah, that is interesting.
Well, yeah, well that, and I think it's sometimes one of the reasons behind the scenes why deals get scuppered. And, you know, when fans are like, well, how come we didn't get this guy? Cause he's only 500,000. It's like, well, maybe the club didn't want to deal with his agent because he's, you know, he's one of those guys that, yeah, the deal's only 500,000, but he's going to screw us on the agent's fee, you know?
No, correct. All right, one more thing I guess we'll just mention briefly. I watched this. Corey said he didn't watch, but El Clasico was your normal El Clasico. A lot of skill, a lot of diving.
Histrionics.
A lot of histrionics, a lot of faking injuries, a lot of controversial calls and non-calls by the ref. You know, just on the verge of being completely out of control. But Barcelona, and I didn't know this was going on, Corey. Did you know they were in the midst of a 39-match unbeaten streak in all competitions?
Yes.
And so that came crashing down at home to their fiercest rivals of Real Madrid, with Ronaldo getting the 2-1 winner, even though it should have been Bale. But his goal was wrongly ruled out, and so Bale could get no luck, right? I don't know if they've completely warmed up to him down there. And this would have been a big opportunity for him to get the game winner in El Clasico, but no. Ronaldo comes riding in again on his white horse and saves the day.
I'm sure he was excited.
Oh, of course, you know, and you talked about it before. He's the type of guy where, you know, he'll score the fifth goal in a 5-1 game, and he celebrates it like it's the game winner.
Yeah, because that's – skill aside, that's one of the reasons why I'm Messi over Ronaldo is, you know – other people will tell you Messi's the best player in the world. Ronaldo will tell you he's the best player in the world.
Exactly. And but the big thing I want to mention, in Ray Hudson was in fine form. This is probably the funniest Ray Hudson line I've ever heard. So here's your situation. There was a great shot, a great chance created, an even better save. And this isn't word for word, but I'm going to paraphrase what Ray Hudson described it as, all right? So this happens, right? And he says, oh, the shot was magisterial, but the save was magisterial-er.
Yeah.
Which I don't even know if that's a word.
It's not, but, you know, artistic license. You can add er on the end of anything.
So maybe you could do it. Would you try that line in your Ray Hudson voice?
Sure.
Let's see. For all the fans out there.
Yeah, hold on. Let me get some Oh, I'm out of water. Damn it. Okay.
Gonna have to do it with a dry throat.
The shot was magisterial. The save was even magisterialer.
Yes. That's what it sounded like. I was like, what a nut. Oh man.
Yeah, you can tack and esk on the end of everything.
Oh, maybe next time if he goes magisterial-esque.
Yes, magisterial-esque. Danger-esque even.
Yeah.
If you're a strong bad fan, it's danger-esque.
Yeah. So, hey, thank you, not Ray Hudson, for that. There, yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. I thought you'd get a kick out of that.
Yeah, no, yes. Okay, see that? Yeah. See, I always forget Ray and Phil do the El Clasico, because that would be worth it just to hear any potential, you know, one-liner gems from old Ray. So maybe next time I'll remember to watch El Clasico, because normally I skip it because, you know, it's just... Yeah.
It's a show more than a game.
Well, it's a show, and, you know, I'm one of those people, I like what I like, not because something's super popular.
All right. Well, here's another one I'll drop on you, too. So Sergio Ramos scored a goal off a corner where he peeled away from his marker and got the header. And Ray Hudson said, he peeled away from his defender like a piece of toilet paper away from the roll.
Okay.
That's pretty kooky, too.
Like when it splits and it does that two thing that drives me nuts. And then, yeah, you know, you can't fix the split. And then now you got like a, you know, now you got like a quarter roll of toilet paper that's split in half and, you know, it's useless at that point.
Yeah. I don't know. We're going down a road. I don't want to go down.
Okay. Hey, I'm just saying you brought it up, but
I know. I should have known better.
That's when the toilet paper roll does that.
I should have known better.
Yeah, because you know me, I'll talk about anything.
No, that's true. Okay, well, we got European football. We got knockout round, right? Quarterfinals. Champions League start up this week. Yeah. I know Man City PSG is your only Premier League match in the Champions League, and then Liverpool versus Dortmund in the Europa League. So that's what we have to look forward to, I guess. Other fun matches, I'm sure, but I don't know them off the top of my head. So check that out. Again, if you go to 2dapyanks.com, go to the EPL fixtures tab and you'll get your EPL fixtures without pop-up ads and all that other stuff. Corey, we have some interesting matches. We have a London Derby. West Ham will be hosting Arsenal.
Yeah. We got the frickin' early game again.
Yeah. And another one, I guess, Newcastle, United. Relegation threatened Newcastle United will travel to Southampton. Norwich, who is just out of the reach of relegation right now, will travel to Crystal Palace. So that might be a winnable game for them. Elsewhere, Aston Villa, already buried, plays Bournemouth. Sunderland, as we said, will host Leicester City. Can't like the odds there.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how old Sam treats Leicester.
Mm-hmm. And then I guess Spurs are involved in the other
old Big Sam. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
And then Spurs are involved in the other, I guess, marquee match with the named teams, where Tottenham will be hosting Manchester United next weekend.
Yeah, the type of match, if Spurs wants to win the title, being at home, they got to win, obviously.
Yes, no choice. Even though we already said it's pretty much over, but yeah, if you don't pick up that 3 points there. And it's way over. Unless Leicester all gets busted for drugs, right? And they get arrested by WADA or whatever.
Yeah.
Which, chew that scene, huh?
Yeah, them and all the Aussie rules players.
So, all right, folks. Well, thank you for listening to this week's show. Enjoy the midweek European football. It's great to have club football back. As I said, it's... Every international break, it seems like it lasts a year. It kills me.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible. Because it always seems like it happens when your team starts playing well, even though we played well on Saturday after the break. But, yeah, it always seems like the break comes when you either need to play well or you're just starting to play well. And, you know, it just seems like it always breaks up your club's rhythm is the point I'm trying to get to.
I got you. So, all right, folks. Well, thank you for listening to the show, as always. And we'll be back next week to see what turns in the road, you know, pop up in the next 7 days until we talk to you again. So, for Corey Chatelain, I'm Chad Smith saying enjoy your week.
I did enjoy Vardy's mock dive right in front of the ref.
This has been the Two Daft Yanks podcast. If you like the show, be sure to find the Yanks at TwoDaftYanks.com or at TwoDaftYanks on Twitter. There, you can stay up to date on all the Two Daft Yanks action by subscribing to the show.